The Bible study on KFUO Radio is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, centered in the gospel of Jesus Christ in faithfulness, servanthood, responsiveness, and excellence, Concordia Seminary.
It's hour number two of the Bible study, the open phone, Ask the Pastor Hour. We like to think we have some interesting conversations here on our Ask the Pastor Bible study, but you should feel free at any time to interrupt any one of those conversations. If you have a question or a comment that you would like, you can change the subject. The hour belongs to you. In this hour, we will be talking with Pastor David Andrus. He is the Executive Director of Lutheran Blind Mission. Good morning, Pastor.
Good morning.
How's everything with you?
Doing well. Doing well.
Your Lent observance underway?
Yes. Last night, as a family, we went to services and had the application of ashes and started our consideration and journey with Christ on the road of Lent.
Do you mind if I ask you where you worship?
No, not at all. Glendale Lutheran Church.
Glendale, okay. Mm-hmm. So, I'm not quite sure how to approach this, so I'm just going to approach it directly.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, for a man who is the executive director of Lutheran Blind Mission, you know what it is to be a blind person yourself.
Right.
We just, with Pastor David Marth, who I understand is a Wisconsinite, as you are.
Indeed.
So you share this most dubious distinction, at least until the Republicans and Democrats get it all straightened out up there.
Oh, boy.
But we were looking at verses 1 through 11 in Ecclesiastes chapter 2, and I noted to Pastor Marth that I do so much enjoy having you here on our Bible study because, for whatever reason, you seem to come at some of these questions from a different and sometimes very interesting angle, which I can't anticipate.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we will have that here and maybe we will not, but let's find out. Verse 9 of Ecclesiastes chapter 2, Solomon says, "So I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me, and whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them." Can you speak to verse 10, "and whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them"?
Oh, you're hitting me flat-footed, so I need a second
I had a feeling that might be the case.
To think. My first thought is that sounds almost like a sinful statement, that when our eyes desire, our eyes see lots of things, and that's fine. And I'll go to the extreme, and I don't mean to offend any of our listeners, but if a man sees an extremely beautiful, shapely woman, that's okay. And he can smile and say, "What a beautiful person." But when he desires her for himself, when he's married to somebody else, and she's married to someone else, that is a problem, because that is sin, desiring something that is not yours.
So that would be a problem that I presume that you never have.
But perfume and lilting voices and the gentle touch can shake a man just as much as the eyes.
Gee, I thought you had the easier path.
Not always. Not always. Although, as I'm getting older, and I don't know if it's because of my age, or I lost my sight when I was 11, and if it's because I'm moving further away from that visual world, things such as an extremely beautiful woman don't tempt me nearly as much as it did years ago. And because I could see, when those other things enter in, those other senses of smell or a touch or a lilting voice, it immediately draws in my mind a beautiful picture. So in some senses, though I was blind, I still see, and I still can be tempted by those things. Because really, sight is not in your eyes, but it's in your mind, and what your mind then creates and does with it. That's where sin can enter.
So then verse 10 of Ecclesiastes 2, "and whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them," mm-hmm. applies to you as much as the rest of us.
Indeed.
Indeed. All right. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Hi, Bill. You're on the Bible study.
Yes. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Bill.
Okay, I'm going to make a statement kind of, and then I want to see what you think. I'm really older than I sound. I was born in 1943, so I'm 67 years old. And
you sound like you're about 25, Bill.
Well, thank you. I'm not only going to open up a can of worms, I'm going to open up a whole factory of cans of worms.
Here. Oh, my goodness. You called the right place.
Okay. Even in the 50s, when I was younger, and in the early 60s, I graduated from high school in 61, I heard a lot of nasty talk, and I'm not saying I never said a bad word. I'm a poor, miserable sinner just like everyone else. But there was a lot of words and statements made back in the 50s and 60s. And today, a lot of the cliches that are going around are the same things that I heard back in the 50s and 60s. They use these cliches of different words, and I'm not going to say them, but there's plenty out there. And a lot
you
of
mean
people,
a cliche like for crying out loud? Are
no,
you talking
I mean,
about something like that?
No, I mean something that refers more of a sexual activity type of thing.
All right.
Okay, and those words that were used back in the 50s and early 60s are now everyday cliches, and I even hear Christians using these terms.
So we're talking vulgarities.
Yes,
profanities.
Yes, and but the way people use them, they don't relate to the idea that it infers sexual activities, thoughts, and desires.
Yeah.
And that bothers me, and also the fact that years ago, I was told when I was a kid that even the word G-E-E, referred to, Jesus' name. Well, I hear people, even Christians, using that term with a Z or something on the end, and it kind of bothers me, too. But the thing about it is, I do get bothered by words because, words are important, how we use our words. And even the word luck or the word magic, I don't even like to use that as a Christian because I don't see in the Bible any difference between black magic and white magic or anything like that. I was just wondering, can you discuss that for me?
You're quite the stickler there, Bill.
I'll hang up and listen to what you have to say.
All right.
Thank you.
See, he backs his truck up and he just dumps a load of worms out there and then he leaves it for Pastor Andrews to sort out. Okay, Pastor, go.
Thank you. Words are an interesting and fascinating thing, and I've taken great fascination with them, especially from my perspective of being totally blind. And even as I alluded to earlier about sights not in your eyes, words themselves are nothing. They're symbols. They're sounds. And what they end up doing is painting a picture in the mind. So if I say a red rubber ball, what do you see?
I'm seeing it.
Okay. Red rubber ball bounces down the middle of the road.
I got it.
Red rubber ball bounces down the middle of the road, and a red Mustang rides over it.
Got it.
Red rubber ball bounces down the middle of the road. The red convertible Mustang with a gorgeous blonde driving drives over
the ball. This story just getting better all the time.
Words are things that we agree upon, those symbols and sounds, to create pictures and images. And so really, words, whether they are vulgarity or earthy words, in and of themselves aren't the bad thing, but it's the pictures they convey and intended by the speaker. And that's why God speaks closely to us about watching our words, because it does convey and communicate pictures and images. And as an individual, is this really the picture or image we want to convey to people? And so that's why words are important. And Bill does make a very valid point, that what we say can influence people. And shifting slightly, I was working with two people who are blind. They communicate on a regular basis, though they don't live in the same city. Some by email, they both have computers, a lot by phone. And one of them sent me an email saying, please help me because I just offended her and I don't know what to do or how to say it. The words we convey an impact upon others. And so we do need to be careful so that people are helped and blessed rather than insulted, hurt, because these words, these symbols, these sounds, many times have a lot of baggage. And the question is, what's the baggage to the other person? Now, the two blind people I'm talking to, their words they were sharing have different baggage for each other. And so what I'm trying to slowly work to help them understand from different parts of the country, that the words you said were misunderstood. Misunderstood.
Well, I'm not sure if this is exactly where Bill was going. And you remember the, you're probably too young to remember W.C. Fields. You remember W.C. Fields?
I never heard or saw him in person, but in the reruns and things, yes.
So you're familiar with him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He was quite the comedian, as you will recall.
Right.
And he used to utter the expletive every once in a while, Godfrey Daniel, which is Godfrey Daniel.
Uh-huh.
But, well, maybe based on what you said about the images that creates in the mind,
mm-hmm.
is that wrong, Pastor, to say Godfrey Daniel, or maybe Darn, or Judas Priest?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about?
I do. Many of these words, especially by a comedian, are trying to draw to the person's mind, oh, I'm going to say a bad word, but I didn't use the real words, but I intend it. So in that sense, yeah, it is wrong.
It's wrong.
Uh-huh.
You know, there are some people that get frustrated, they get angry, and they say, oh, God bless America.
Uh-huh.
Is that wrong? I hope this is not all wrong, because I just did all of them. This would be a bad day for me.
Well, here's the difficulty that we have as human beings, is controlling our anger. I would rather have someone say, oh, God bless America, because they're catching themselves in the middle of their anger and shifting, not wanting to say the bad words, bad images, and yet trying to make something good out of it. That's far better than doing the other way.
But if sin is sin is sin, I too appreciate the effort. I understand what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's sin, it's sin.
Mm-hmm. It is. It is. And that's why, and too often we think, and that's why Lent is a good season to be in. Because as we go along, hey, I didn't hit anybody today. I didn't kill anybody. I didn't even rudely condemn or damn somebody to hell by my language. I'm a good person, and I try to smile, and aren't I a great person? But when you really look at my heart, which God does, and some of the intent behind what goes on, even with, oh, I've smoothed it over by saying God bless America, God knows all that. And what Lent tries to do is help us reflect upon ourselves, our lives, so that we might realize how truly sinful we really are. And that not to get us so in depth of despair we're going to kill ourselves, so that then we look at the cross and see how amazing it is that our God would love us and come after us and do something to change all of that.
Now, you realize that the conversation we're having right now is just pretty much in the context of ridiculous, because, mm-hmm. as Bill pointed out, salty, vulgar, profane speech has become commonplace in our culture, so that you can be sitting in a restaurant and there'd be somebody sitting in the booth next to you, and they're just as blue as they can be,
mm-hmm.
and it's all considered quite normal, certainly by them, and I guess most of the patrons who are sitting around them. So that when we start talking about saying things like Judas Priest, and that's wrong, who cares, Pastor? I mean, we're way past that. We're into S words and F words and everything else,
right,
on a pretty
right.
regular basis. Right. I mean, who cares?
Good point to make, and that's the difficulty as a Christian. We have two circles in which we walk. We walk in the world, and the world is keenly watching us and what we're going to say and do. But then we walk with fellow Christians, whether that be in our home or in our congregations, and that is where Bill's comment can really make a difference also. Because for some people, as hard as they strive to serve their Lord and work, these little words, these switching of words, that offends them because they've worked hard in their lives to eliminate them. So when a Christian just flippantly says some of those things, they realize or think, now this Christian isn't really taking hard, concerned effort at changing their life, but just floating along. And so we have those two circles of people within which we walk. Certainly the outer circle is where the earthy profanity has a real impact, especially if we as a Christian would do that. And there, I suppose, in a sense, you can get away with saying the things like Fields says and think I'm fine. But when we really look at our hearts, because people understand the intent behind some of these words many times, or the fact that we say them so flippantly without any intent that we're not watching our mouths at all.
Now, if an Englishman gets up in the morning and heads out to his car, they probably don't call it a car, they call it something else, his auto, and he finds a £5 note laying on the ground on the way to the auto, he might say something like, by Jove, this is going to be a good day. Well, that's what British people say. They sometimes say, by Jove. But the truth is that Jove is a name which is another name for Jupiter. The king of the mythological gods.
Really?
And so what you've done there is you've sworn by Jupiter. Mm. Now, does God look down from his heavenly throne, in this case a British situation, or, for example, let's take the Irish. You might have heard the Irish say something like, Shorn Begorra.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Begorra is an antiquated Anglo-Irish form of by God.
Mm-hmm.
So does God look down from his throne and say, oh, those people, they don't even know what they're talking about. They're just throwing words around. They don't even know what they're doing. Or does God say, this offends me and is a stench in my nostrils. You know, I provided you a £5 note, Mr. Englishman, and you're swearing by Jupiter. And I abhor it. Which of the two things do you think is more likely to be true?
I'm going to give you two answers to that, and they're really the same. Yes, and why do you want to know?
Well, you want me to be honest?
Mm-hmm.
Because I want to be able to get away with as much as I can get away with.
And if that's your answer, then yes, God says it's a stench, and it bothers him tremendously.
Oh, that's not what I was hoping to get.
Mm-hmm. But now if you're on the other side, and the question, why do you want to know, really tries to get to the heart of why are you asking this question?
Are we having a law and gospel discussion here?
Yes, we are.
We are.
And I was taught by some of the best. Yes,
yeah?
It really is.
So explain to me how the law and the gospel comes into this rather strange conversation we're having here.
Well, and that's a good point to make and to ask, Chuck, because it really comes to bear for us always in our lives as we do things. Is it because of A or B? If we're trying to get away with things, if we're trying to justify ourselves, if we're trying to work our way to heaven, the law needs to be there to say it's not that way at all. Yet if we are trying to find the assurance of God, then the gospel comes. Now, do these words, if it would be that, well, I didn't realize by Jove was by Jupiter, God can forgive you. But if it was so I can slip away and get away with as much as I can, well, God says, no, you shouldn't do that. Now, literally, I did not know it was by Jupiter. I'll never say by Jove again now.
Yeah, you know, the moons that Galileo discovered orbiting Jupiter, back when he invented the telescope, are known as Jovian moons.
Mm. I didn't realize that.
How about that? See, my astronomical knowledge...
trivia of the day that
wastes time
forget.
For everybody here. 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727. Hi, David. You're on the Bible study.
Hi. You guys are talking some interesting subject here about words, I would say. my interpretation of it anyway, but how would you explain that scripture? It's either in Matthew or Luke. I don't have my Bible in front of me, but where Jesus said, by your words you shall be justified, and by your words you shall be condemned. How does that relate to our life on this earth and our salvation?
As it pertains to vulgarity?
Well, he said you'll be condemned by your words, and you'll be justified by your words. So how do you relate that to how people speak and how Christians should speak?
Let's see what Pastor has to say. Thanks for the call.
Well, and I appreciate, David, your calling, because you brought back to mind with the earlier conversation of the Irishman and the Englishman. Is God pleased or is it a stench? Really, that action has nothing to do with the pleasing or the stench, but it's the faith or lack of faith that the Englishman or the Irishman or woman would have. Jesus is saying, by your words, you will be condemned, or by your words you'll be justified. He is referring to the fact that your words ultimately bring out whether you have faith or no faith. And it is therefore your faith that'll justify, or the lack of faith that condemns you.
Well, you know, I could see where you could come up with two different answers for David's question. I could see where somebody might say, well, what we're going to do is we're going to examine your words when you get up here to the pearly gates. And if there are a bunch of words in there that are vulgar and profane, then you're not in. That's it. You're not coming into heaven. I can see somebody else offering an answer that says, look, we can sift it right down to this. If your words are, Jesus is Lord, you're in. If your words are, Jesus is not Lord, you're not in. It's just that simple. What do you think?
Why do you want to know?
Because I want to get in.
Ah, if your words are Jesus is Lord, you will be in. By trusting in Him alone, you are in. Now, on the flip side, though, Chuck, if you would say, because, oh, I believe Jesus is my Lord, but I don't want to watch my tongue, I'd say, I think you need to, because it's your words that can pull you away. So it's, again, a yes. One can't always just be on one side of the fence or the other, because of the law and the gospel and because of our sinful state.
So if among my words we find Jesus is Lord, Jesus is Lord, I believe in Jesus, He is the Savior of the world, I believe in Jesus Christ, second article of the creed, but there's a healthy measure of F-bombs in my other words. Do the F-bombs cancel out the first words?
Well, to your witness, absolutely. To your salvation, that's up to God. Because ultimately, God is the one who looks in our heart, and there's going to be a few people who have done some F-bombs, but because they have faith in their heart, they're going to be saved. For to God, whether we use vulgar language or I just say something as benign as, Chuck, that's ridiculous. But now in my heart, if it was, Chuck, that is ridiculous, with some anger and venom, my heart has just sinned as bad as if I would have said the F word. God looks at the heart and what's going on, not so much the outward. We get so wrapped up in the outward that we forget that it's really coming from the heart, and that's where God really looks to.
Suppose somebody listening to us says, whew, well, I can tell you this. I mean, I know I'm not perfect, but one thing I don't do is I don't use vulgarities and I don't use profanities. My speech is pretty pure, and by the way, yes, I do believe in Jesus Christ. So I'm feeling pretty good about myself in this conversation. What would you say? Hold that thought. I can't wait to hear the answer to this. Pastor David Andrus is with us here today, Executive Director of Lutheran Blind Mission, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We'll be right back.
I've heard business people complain that nonprofits don't respond in timely ways to needs and opportunities. I believe that's true. Concordia Seminary strives to instill responsiveness in our graduates. Responsiveness to the needs of congregations and responsiveness to the needs of our communities and world. Responsiveness is a seminary core value, and it's a great commission value.
Explore the City Museum's enchanted forest, secret caves, and passageways after it closes to the public, Sunday, March 13th. The sleepover is for families, parents, and kids under the age of 16, and it includes dinner, breakfast, parking, and all-night access to the museum. Participants should bring sleeping bags or bedrolls, air mattresses, pajamas, and additional snacks or beverages if they wish. Reservations are required. There's more information at citymuseum.org.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Planned Parenthood, the nation's largest chain of abortion mills, gets hundreds of millions of your tax dollars each year. Is this money well spent? You be the judge. Recently, an undercover video showed a Planned Parenthood staff member giving appalling advice to someone who thought he might have a sexually transmitted disease. She said, "Go donate blood. They test for everything." She admitted this was advice she gave lots of people. When those at blood donation centers were told of her actions, they were obviously upset. They don't appreciate being used by Planned Parenthood as their personal STD screeners. If you think this is bad use of your tax dollars, visit today's broadcast link at lifeissues.org. Sign on to our effort to get Congress to stop funding Planned Parenthood.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
For the record, I'm Steve Coleman with today's Religion Roundup. Muslim groups have defended their record in advance of today's U.S. House hearing on radicalization in the American Muslim community and that community's response. At a Washington news conference, Alejandro Butel of the Muslim Public Affairs Council said a study by his group found
that 2 out of every 5 Al-Qaeda-related plots threatening the United States since 9/11 has been thwarted with the assistance of Muslim communities. Within the past year, that number has actually spiked to 3/4 of such plots.
Minnesota Congressman Keith Ellison, who's Muslim, is among those testifying at today's hearing. Amish and Mennonite neighbors are helping with chores on a Pennsylvania farm where 7 of a couple's 8 children died in a house fire Tuesday night. The couple's pastor says donations already have taken care of the children's burial expenses. I'm Steve Coleman.
This week on Lamplighter Theater.
December 21st. Today, winter has begun.
Begun?
It does not properly set in until this date. We must barricade our windows.
They're coming in from every direction.
Watch that hole above you. It's large enough for a wolf.
Don't miss the next Lamplighter Theater.
Saturday mornings at 11 on KFUO Radio.
Coming to the Sheldon Concert Hall in Grand Center, the Celtic Tenors.
So I can stand on mountains. You raise me up to walk on stormy seas. And I am strong.
The Celtic Tenors, March 11th at the Sheldon Concert Hall in Grand Center. Time for the concert, 8 p.m., $40 orchestra, $35 balcony. Visit thesheldon.org for more information.
Our Ask the Pastor Hour, featuring Pastor David Andrus, Executive Director of Lutheran Blind Mission, numbers of 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727. We've been talking about the problems and the compromise that vulgar and profane speech becomes a Christian, and how it is inconsistent with what I think we would call the will of God for our lives. Now we're looking at the other side of the coin, Pastor Andrus. There are people that I know, I'm sure there are people that you know, from whom you have never heard, let alone a vulgar or profane word, but really a negative or cynical word.
Mm-hmm.
Are those people closer to the pearly gates than some of the rest of us?
No.
Simple answer.
Correct. Because it's not our outward actions that bring us closer to the pearly gate. Again, it's really a faith and trust in Jesus. Now, I commend people and I encourage them. I say thank you very much for your kindness and your generous words, your whole demeanor, because it helps many, many people. And it is a wonderful witness to the faith that you have. And having a wonderful witness may impact people that you might not even realize that are paying attention to you. You may have heard the story. This isn't quite words, but it's a similar thing. And I don't know if it's a true story or not. I could believe it. A new pastor was in just come to Houston, and he was taking the bus. A lot of people in Houston do ride buses. And the bus driver gave him change, and the pastor sat down, and he looked, and he thought, this guy gave me a quarter too much. What should I do? Should I keep it or not? And I better give it back to him. And as he was getting off, he handed him the quarter back and said, you gave me too much. And the bus driver smiled and said, you're the new pastor, aren't you? And the pastor said, yeah. And the bus driver said, you know, I've been thinking about going to church, and I'll see you on Sunday. And in the little episode, it said the pastor, when he got off, he realized a quarter could have made or broke the difference of my witness and my helping this person. Obviously, this bus driver wanted to see, is this guy really going to live up to what he preaches? And so many times it is for us, is our witness. Do we live up to what we say? I believe in Jesus. Well, do our actions, do our other words live up to that or not? And I will admit right away, there are many times mine do not. And for that I ask for forgiveness, as well as in strength and guidance, to change and improve it so that my witness might reflect even more my faith and help other people come to know Jesus.
Let's take another phone call here. Our numbers are 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727. Marie, you're on the Bible study. Don't listen to your radio. Hello, Marie?
Yes. I have a question. I'm turning it down.
Good.
my question is this. The Bible states that all liars shall have their part in the lake. Does that or does it not exempt folks that are bearing the title of pastor, evangelist, elder, or whatever? Because all generally means all. And I have a problem with that. When people that are claiming to be leaders and they are not representing what they claim, I would rather run into an old wine beveler in the street and take the advice and the words of some old wine bubbler or beveler in the street
okay. Than
some of the folks that are bearing titles.
Let me ask you a question, Marie. Do you know anybody who is not a liar?
No, I don't. So then everybody is going to heaven then. So who's going to be exempt from heaven?
All right, let's see what the pastor has to say. Thanks for the call.
Okay.
Good question. Pastor?
This is really one of the challenges and difficulties as one who bears a title, pastor.
Executive director even.
Oh, that's an easy one. That's far easier to handle than pastor,
really?
I feel. Mm-hmm. Yeah, executive director just means that I'm the head of an organization.
Yeah?
And there's a lot of people have organizations who sit behind desks and do the right stuff.
So you think the title pastor is more weighty?
I do. Mm-hmm.
Ah, okay.
Mm-hmm. Because it's reflecting my Christian faith very, very much. I mean, if I'm on an airplane or even a bus and say I'm an executive director of something, that means one thing. But if I say I'm a pastor, that immediately brings, again, a picture to mm-hmm. mind. This is God's representative who speaks about God.
Okay.
So for me, that title carries much more weight. And because of that, she'd indicated, that causes me concern.
Now, that title implies honesty.
It does. here's the dilemma. Those who carry the title, no matter where they are still sinners. I think what really would help, it was Maryland, I believe, and other people, is, and this is my practice, if I am challenged, you said this, but now it's this, were you lying, is immediately at the being confronted of such situation, well, first off, I will never, yeah, I can say this, I will never openly lie. Now, sometimes I get tripped up in my words that it appears to be a lie. Now, that has happened.
I can get you to lie in 10 seconds.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, try it.
I'll ask two questions.
Okay.
Are you a saint?
Yes and no.
No, are you a saint? You either are or you aren't. Are you a saint?
Come on. I can't. It's a yes or no. I mean, yes, I am in God's sight. No, I'm not in the world's sight.
Are you a sinner?
Yes and no.
Well, I guess I was wrong. I didn't get you to lie, but you confused the issue for me completely.
See, I was afraid you were going to ask, are you still beating your wife?
Nah, that's too easy.
I never have. I will never openly lie, but we do sometimes get caught in our words. In fact, just the other day, my daughters caught me.
Yeah.
If you ever want to know whether you're a sinner or not, just have kids.
Those daughters are watching, aren't they?
Oh man, are they watching? And I stumbled, and I will admit, if I'm caught in my words, and I think this is really what the difference is, I did not try to defend myself and my actions. In their eyes, I had slipped up. And I said, you know, I can see what you're saying. I apologize. And I'll try better not to do it again. If pastors would acknowledge when they're caught in situations that are simple, like lying, and now if they're caught embezzling, they should go to prison. And we're not talking about the big sins. We're talking about, well, in God's sight, they're all sins. And that's the dilemma. But in the world's view, some things are more weighty. Some things are more blatant because they're deliberate. Some things are just a little slip or perception because other people perceive it differently. If, when those situations arise, people will admit that a mistake must have been made, I apologize, people go a long way to acknowledge this is a man who's or a woman who's trying to be honest and was caught in a circumstance that makes them look dishonest. If they'll admit that and seek their forgiveness and promise not to try to let that happen again, people go will more gladly accept a person like that than when somebody says, I didn't make a mistake, I didn't lie, that's your trouble, you saw it wrong. That's the difficulty of language and communication. Not the words per se, but the images, the concepts that we're trying to convey. Sometimes they don't do exactly what we want.
Well, let me see if I can go back and uncomplicate that for the rest of us who are simple-minded. Mm-hmm. Because it has been said regularly here on both our Bible study hour in the Scriptures or our Ask the Pastor hour that we are at the same time saints and sinners.
Right.
You guys even have a Latin phrase to elevate that to a really high place.
Nemo ustis et peccato.
Oh, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Now, there's somebody who hears that pastor and says, you're a liar. You're either a saint or you're a sinner. You're not both because they are mutually exclusive. So to claim to be both makes you a liar. Can you see where somebody might come to that conclusion?
Sure.
How do you explain to that person that it's not a lie?
There's a lot of things in life that fall into a gray area, and they're not absolutely black, they're not absolutely white. things can't be black and white always. There's that gray area where some things are found, and I'm trying to think of a simple example. I can't. It's raining outside. Is that good news or bad news?
If I say both, you'll have me.
It depends on the context.
Yeah.
You know, if we've had a week of rain and there's more rain, oh no. But if it's been a dry spell for a month, it could be, oh, that's good news. Now, in and of itself, rain is neutral, but the context sets good or bad. And so many times it is with our language and words, it depends on the context. So am I a saint or a sinner? I am a saint, I am a sinner. So it's the context that sets it. Before God, I'm a saint. Before the world, they see my sins, so yes, I am a sinner.
505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727. Hi, Nash, you're on the Bible study. Good morning.
How you doing there? I was listening, and I agree with the pastor as far as us in Christ. We are saints and sinners. That he did not, I could say he did not lie, but I heard the pastor say that he would never openly lie. And it wasn't followed up, Lord willing. And that, as a sinner, I suspect is an untruth.
So we need to ask Pastor Andrus if his wife has ever asked him, does this dress make me look fat?
And I, to that answer, I would say, I'm the blind guy. I don't know.
Exit stage left.
It's just such a strong statement to say that I will never openly lie.
Yep.
My goodness.
Okay.
I mean, and to do that, and Pastor, you said it with such conviction.
Right.
And I think that it was just a mistake to say it. But in a sense, I find it to be an untruth.
All right. Pastor, you've been challenged. Thanks, Nash.
Okay.
What's your response?
Nash, you've nailed me. You're probably right. It is one of my primary principles. I do not want to lie. I really do not want to. Yet there are times as we roll back even the past 3 weeks that probably you'd say, how about right there? And I'd have to say, well, I was fudging the truth. Well, that could be considered a lie. So, Nash, you're right. You're right. I probably cannot equivocally say I do not lie. Yeah.
That great theologian, Jake Blues, I don't know if you're familiar with the Blues Brothers. Probably not, because I think there's some vulgarities in that movie there. But there's a scene in that movie where John Belushi and Carrie Fisher, the two characters that are playing, she reveals that his character, Jake Blues, left her at the altar.
Mm.
And she says to him, "You contemptible pig, I stood at the back of a cathedral waiting for you, with 300 friends and relatives in attendance. My uncle hired the best Romanian caterers in the state. To obtain the 7 limousines for the wedding party, my father used up his last favor with Mad Pete Trullo. So for me, for my mother, my grandmother, my father, my uncle, and for the common good, I must now kill you and your brother." At that point, John Belushi, Jake Blues, falls to his knees. And he says, "Oh, please don't kill us. Please don't kill us. You know I love you. I wouldn't leave you. It wasn't my fault." She says, "You miserable slug. You think you can talk your way out of this? You betrayed me." And then he says, "No, I didn't. Honest. I ran out of gas. I had a flat tire. I didn't have enough money for cab fare. My tux didn't come back from the cleaners. An old friend came in from out of town. Somebody stole my car. There was an earthquake, a terrible flood, locusts. It wasn't my fault." And I think we're probably closer to Jake Blues than we'd like to admit.
How do you pull these things out of your hat?
I keep them tucked away in a safe place just for a moment like
this. Just for a moment like this. You must. Oh, that is very good and very poignant. And so you and Nash are correct. You nailed me. Though it's something I try very hard to do, reality is I'm fooling myself. You're right.
Well, and that, thank you for that admission that that's a exemplary thing for you to do. Now, we know that there are those who are pathological liars.
Mm-hmm.
Who remember that old Saturday Night Live routine? Who was the guy who used to do that? I forget his name, but it was quite comedic to watch him just fall into pathological lying. And then there are others who, I won't say have conquered this, but for whom it is easier to say, yes, I have made a mistake. Yes, you've got me, just as you have today.
Mm-hmm.
Who seem to be able to move in the direction of honesty with more ease than some of the rest of us. Have you got any wisdom for us on that, Pastor? Not to set yourself up as God's gift to honesty or anything, but you have made it a personal conviction to really pursue honesty. Have you got any wisdom for us?
A couple, three things that go through my mind with that. One is usually when you try to defend yourself and not accept the times when you're wrong and admit to it, you only get yourself in more trouble. And as a teenager, I do remember, and that's why it's a strong principle of mine. And that's why I said, but Nash was right in catching me. But it is a principle. I really try not to lie. I really do try not to. Yet circumstances and situations make it such that I probably do, and I'm fooling myself to say otherwise. But when one is confronted with it, if you'll just admit to that and take a clean step from there, that's a lot easier, I have found, than trying to justify yourself and wonder, now to whom have I lied? And which lie did I tell? And I have to keep my lies straight, or all of a sudden my story is really unbelievable. So it's easier to be honest. That's step number one. Step number two is I don't have my self-esteem, my value of who I am is not built upon on lies, but the simple fact of who I am. That's not been an easy road to get to, that I can say, which I am saying, I am content with who I am, with all of the parts that I am, which means that it is that I'm a person who is blind, and there are certain things, therefore, I cannot do, to be content with that. Once you are content with who you are, it is much easier to be honest and not try to justify, rationalize, or lift oneself up to something you're not.
An earlier caller made reference to what turns out to be Matthew chapter 12, mm-hmm. Verses 36 through 37 anyway. For by your words you will be justified, by your words you will be condemned. That's verse 37.
Mm-hmm.
What we didn't mention is verse 36, which is even worse. For somebody who's listening to us today and can say in the privacy of his or her own heart and mind, you know, my speech is pretty clean. I especially when I compare myself to these some of these rap stars, I don't do anything like that. And I'm not here to say that I haven't uttered a word for which I feel some sense of guilt, but my speech mm-hmm. is pretty clean. But you know what verse 36 says? Verse 36 says, I tell you, these are the words of Jesus, on the day of judgment, people will give account for what? Every vulgarity, every profanity, every false gossip. No, here's what it says. For every careless word they speak.
Mm-hmm.
Now suddenly I'm feeling pretty convicted,
mm-hmm.
Pastor.
Mm-hmm.
What should I do with that?
Grovel in it for a while.
Okay. No, it's no fun. How long do I have to grovel? Okay, I'm done.
It's good that we are confronted with the reality of who we are so that we can turn to the cross and receive forgiveness. It's when we think we're a pretty good person, when we think that we don't lie, that we are lifting ourselves up to be a good person, and by that think that that's what's going to get us to heaven. It's when we realize we aren't a good person, that we do lie, that we do say these things, that we do have careless words, that we turn then to Jesus and say, I've screwed up and I can't do anything right. Please forgive me. And he says, that's why I died on the cross.
And that's that.
In his book, yeah. Yeah. That's where those sanctification enters in. And the Holy Spirit works in our hearts and our lives through his word and through the sacraments, which will strengthen us so that we can start doing less of those careless, thoughtless, which end up often to be cruel things, and in reverse that to be thoughtful, kind, and helpful things to people.
So the person reading verse 36 in Matthew 12, I tell you, on the day of judgment, people will give an account for every careless word they speak. Mm-hmm. I can see where a person could read that and say, oh, wow. All right. Well, I'm just going to have to work very, very hard at guarding my speech and using no careless words.
Mm-hmm.
You could either say that, or you could say, I can't do this.
That's right.
I would like to think that I could do it, but I'm going to get in a situation where it's going to be awkward, or it's going to be frustrating, and I know it's going to happen. I'm going to say something I shouldn't.
And this is why, if you look back on the centuries, there have been monks and monasteries and church orders where they take a vow of silence.
Well, now there's a good idea.
But then I'll ask you to go
back
to...
Doesn't work very well on the radio, I want to tell you.
But then you need to go back to Matthew chapter 5, where Jesus says, you have heard, if you commit adultery, you have sinned. Well, I tell you, if you even have a thought towards another person, that is sin. And he goes through, not just with adultery, but words and actions, that he moves it not just to our actions and our words, but to our heart. So even if you kept totally silent and said no words, God still is looking to the heart. And whether the words bubbled up or not, was the heart there thinking those careless thoughts and words? God knows. And that's why we evaluate our heart during this time of Lent, so that we can always be looking to the cross for forgiveness.
Brought Lent back into it. Nicely done.
Well, thank you.
I had some Lent questions I was going to ask you, but we're out of time. I'll have to save those for Pastor Tom Reese. He's coming in tomorrow.
Good.
You dodged that bullet there, brother. Good.
Whew.
Good job. Thank you for the time.
You're welcome, and thank you.
God's blessings to your Lententide.
And to yours.
That is Pastor David Andrus. He is the Executive Director of Lutheran Blind Mission and our Ask the Pastor guest in this hour. Now, tomorrow we continue in Ecclesiastes. Our journey through chapter 2 will continue with verses 12 through 26, and our guest will be Pastor Michael Walder of Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, and then our Ask the Pastor guest on Friday will be Pastor Tom Reese. He is president of the LCMS Foundation and a regular guest here on our Ask the Pastor Hour. We look forward to that. Thanks for listening and the very good phone calls, even the ones that nabbed us. Nash, you know who you are.
Listen to Chuck Rathard and guest pastors Monday through Friday at this same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the web at kfuo.org. Download programs from the Bible Study Archives at kfuo.org. The Bible Study is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis.